It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Tuesday morning, February 14th, Valentine's Day. I'm Steve Cole, broadcasting live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. A bomb threat closed the Leadville, Colorado Mountain College campus Monday and forced local schools into lockout status. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh has more.
Around 9:20 Monday morning, a man who is now in custody reported to Lake County law enforcement that a backpack on the Leadville, Colorado Mountain College campus had a bomb in it. The campus was immediately placed on lockdown. Students and faculty were evacuated to the cafeteria. All Lake County schools were placed on lockout status, which means that classes continued, but no one was allowed in or out of the buildings. Betty Benson, public information officer of the Lake County Office of Emergency Management, told KDNK Monday evening about what happened next.
We did what needed to be done and called out various resources to secure the campus, secure the students, to ensure their safety, and called out the bomb squad to come and investigate what had been relayed to us as a potential threat there on campus.
As of 1 p.m. Monday, about 30 emergency responders were on the scene, including the South Central All-Hazards Regional Bomb Squad, a special ops group, and the State Department of Corrections from Pueblo. Close to 3 hours later, bomb squad canine units had cleared several vehicles and some buildings on campus.
They have spent the majority of the day and determined that there is no credible threat, and they are now in the process of determining the appropriate charges for the person that they have in custody, the only person that we believe has been involved in this.
Around 7 o'clock Monday night, law enforcement gave the all clear, but had not released the name of the suspect. Students and faculty were allowed to leave the Leadville campus. Classes there were canceled Monday night, but CMC officials said that classes will resume today. For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
A trio of Republican abortion bills failed last week in a Democratic-controlled committee after a 12-hour hearing. Bente Berkland has more from the state capitol.
One measure would have required the state and abortion providers to inform women about a pill that can potentially reverse the early stages of a chemical abortion. Amy Mendoza says after starting the chemical abortion process, she changed her mind. She eventually found out about the reversal pill, but says she wishes she had known earlier.
I now have a healthy baby boy, and I am very thankful every single day that that option and that choice was there for me.
But there are very limited studies on the pill's efficacy, and it's not FDA approved. Many medical doctors called it junk science. Jackie Bilotti is a graduate student in biotechnology and also testified against it during the hearing.
You just don't give someone every single option for something that may or may not work. I don't think the state needs to start condoning giving medical information that's not proven medical information.
A separate measure that would have effectively made all abortions illegal failed, as did a bill that would have required new regulations for abortion clinics. I'm Bente Berkland at the state capitol.
Fans and foes of Planned Parenthood marched in cities and towns across the country on Saturday, including in Carbondale and Glenwood Springs. Local journalist Hamilton Pevick went to the march in Carbondale, organized by Maura Masters, and has this report.
On Saturday, February 11th, Carbondale residents took to the streets again, but this time in support of Planned Parenthood. Carbondale local Maura Masters organized the rally.
I'm the editor of AliceTheMag.com online magazine, and we are by, for, and about women. So today we marched to support Planned Parenthood in direct opposition, actually, to the defund Planned Parenthood rallies that are going on across the nation. A few defunders were here, and it was all very peaceful. And, you know, everybody has an opinion. Everybody has a choice. And the women who march today choose women and women's health care.
Federal funding of Planned Parenthood is being threatened by the new administration, triggering the passionate issue of abortion. Every time reproductive health is mentioned, someone else screams abortion, muddying the waters on the issue of women's health and polarizing neighbors. A handful of pro-lifers came out to support the federal defunding of Planned Parenthood. I quickly found myself in the middle of an old and divisive debate.
Okay, what's your name?
Christy Gregg.
And can you read to me your sign?
Abortion hurts women.
Sayer Jackson organized the opposition rally.
I helped start an organization that takes Sprinter vans and puts ultrasound machines inside of them and then parks them in front of abortion clinics. We now have vans in 50 cities all over America. And on average, 3 out of 5 of the women that come into these vans decide to keep their baby when they're offered a free ultrasound outside of an abortion clinic. The real crux of the abortion argument is it a child in the womb or is it not? And if it is a person in the womb, this isn't a women's rights issue, this is a human rights issue.
Jackson and her group are talking about abortion, while Heidi Hendricks is talking about affordable access to health care.
The reason that I am here today is because in my 20s, like early 20s, when we're all insured and single and moving around, Planned Parenthood was my healthcare provider everywhere I went. Wyoming, Colorado, I got my physicals there, I got my breast exams there. If I had a weird thing on my face, I went in and talked to them, and they were out of network. You didn't need insurance. You could walk in the door anywhere, and they are valuable to a lot of women.
The defunders' main argument is that they don't want their tax money paying for abortions, and patients can get health care from other organizations. Pro-lifer Monica McKay explains further.
And if you look at, for example, testing for, let's say, STDs, those services are available free through other services other than Planned Parenthood. So when we look at Planned Parenthood, really, the crux of their offerings is abortion. If you look at statistically what Planned Parenthood.
And where do you get your information from?
You know, I don't have the research off the top of my head, but I'm sure you can do the research.
So I did the research and spoke to Whitney Phillips, Senior Director of Strategic Communications and Marketing for Planned Parenthood in the Rocky Mountains.
Planned Parenthood is first and foremost a healthcare provider, and the majority of the services that we provide here at Planned Parenthood are things like life-saving cancer screenings, birth control, STD testing and treatment. We also provide abortion care here at Planned Parenthood. The majority of the funding that we get from the government comes in the form of reimbursements from Medicaid patients. And none of those reimbursements are able to be used for abortion care. That money is going towards birth control, family planning, STDs, breast health, and cancer screenings.
According to Planned Parenthood website and factcheck.org, I quote, "Abortions represent 3% of total services provided by Planned Parenthood, and roughly 10% of its clients received an abortion. The group does receive federal funding, but the money cannot be used for abortions by law." End quote. How many other organizations provide the same services as Planned Parenthood in our area?
That is a tough question. I'm not sure I know exactly the number. The thing to remember about Planned Parenthood specifically is that we are reproductive health care experts. So while there may be a variety of other community health centers in somebody's town, Planned Parenthood is really experts when it comes to reproductive care, and that's really the role that we serve in these communities.
The issue of affordable health care is overshadowed by the more divisive issue of abortion. All the shouting can drown out the point on both sides, making it difficult, if not impossible, to talk about reproductive health and education. It seems to me that this debate comes down to beliefs, and no amount of words will change someone's beliefs. That is what life experience is for. I'm Hamilton Pevick. This piece was produced independently.
President Trump is taking a tough stand against immigration, calling for a wall between the United States and Mexico, and has threatened to dump NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Now farmers are saying their voices need to be heard before anything drastic is done. Eric Galatis reports.
Agriculture and trade groups are voicing their concerns over President Donald Trump's stance on immigration and his threats to withdraw from the North American Free Trade Agreement. Trump's calls to build a wall between the U.S. and Mexico and possibly institute a tax on Mexican imports have incited a political crisis between the two countries. He also says he'll either renegotiate NAFTA to benefit Americans or withdraw from it altogether. Karen Hansen-Kuhn of the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy says instead of pitting people in one country against another, NAFTA could be replaced so that it benefits all. She says rural farmers struggle to make a living under the current agreement.
So much of the focus has been on producing as much as possible and depending on export market. And in the process, both because of provisions on tariffs and because of changes in investment rules, farmers have lost bargaining power.
Hansen-Kuhn says the Trump administration needs to take public comments and check with farmers and rural communities before making changes to NAFTA. Hansen-Kuhn calls Trump's plan to build a wall between Mexico and the U.S. outrageous, short-sighted, and beneath us as a nation. She says America's farm economy cannot function without those workers.
Besides the fact that it's a wrong-headed proposal, I think it makes it pretty hard for the Mexican government to take any negotiations with the Trump administration because people there are understandably upset.
The IATP also opposes parts of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but the group supports restoring country of origin labeling so consumers know where the meat they're buying comes from, and it supports having more laws to regulate the dumping of foreign-grown fruits and vegetables into American markets, affecting local farmers' profits. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.
Average retail gasoline prices in Colorado dropped 1.8 cents per gallon in the past week, averaging $2.14 yesterday, according to Gas Buddy. The national average has increased 1.4 cents per gallon to $2.27. Prices in Colorado Sunday were 56% cents per gallon higher than the same day last year, and about 10 per gallon lower than mid-January. Analysts predict prices will go up over the next few weeks in response to increased demand and OPEC's lower output. Pitkin County continues to have the highest gasoline prices in the state, averaging $3.24 a gallon. Garfield County averages about $2.45 a gallon. The lowest prices in the state are in Boulder County at $2.06 a gallon.